This is a Christian Science Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. Website, mbeinstitute.org. The focus of this prayer treatment will be on plank number 18 of 32, and the 32 planks begin on page 330 of Science and Health. Each one of the planks have a specific topic, and the topic for this plank number 18 is the only substance. I shall read the text, which is one paragraph, and then I will read the key points of the paragraph utilizing the original text, and then there will be comments as whatever flows to the surface here. The only substance. Spirit God has created all in and of Himself. Spirit never created matter. There is nothing in spirit out of which matter could be made. For as the Bible declares, without the Logos, the Aeon, or Word of God, was not anything made that was made. Spirit is the only substance, the invisible and indivisible infinite God. Things spiritual and eternal are substantial. Things material and temporal are insubstantial. That's the end of the text. The first key point is Spirit, God, has created all in and of Himself. The definition of God from page 465, which is the chapter on recapitulation, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13, is as follows. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. On page 578, which is the glossary, there is another definition of God, almost the same, but a little bit different emphasis on some of the terms for God. God is the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. And there's another definition of God under the title of good on that same page, 578. And it defines God as follows, or rather good. God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. So God could not create anything that is not in accordance with these terms that define God. So the only thing He could bring forth is things such as the intelligence, the wisdom, and the knowing of omniscience. Since mind is all faculty and all functionality, then we have unlimited qualities of any faculty. The only limit we have is what we impose individually, because mind reveals to the world that those qualities of mind and spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, we can reveal unto ourselves anything of any quality or quantity. If one combines the definition of mind from those three sources, there really isn't anything that is left out. And everything about God is available in unlimited quantity. And since the synonymous terms work together in one grand matrix, then, for example, take any single quality of mind and apply that to any of the other synonymous terms for God. For example, the intelligence applies to spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Everything we do, we must utilize our ability to reflect intelligence and also knowing and wisdom, creative ability. Mind is the only power, and it's omnipotent. So for everything that we do that is applying ourselves to reflecting the qualities of God, it has the power of God, the power of mind, automatically with it. Therefore, nothing that we do can be futile, because we have the intelligence of mind, and everything is going to be effective because we have the power of mind. We're not limited in any way as long as we stay on the side of God. And remember, spirit is the only substance. So we can't be thinking about matter as being anything that has power. Nothing material, nothing anti-godlike can have any power whatsoever. Also, love means completeness and fulfillment. So we cannot be absent of any quality that is needed to do whatever God has planned for us to do. We have the ability, because all faculty is in mind, and it's limited only by our own perspective. So if we look at the big picture and realize that everything is the capacity of God in operation, then we can do anything that is needed to be done. Keeping in mind, humility is extremely important, because everything good is from God. It's not from an individual. It's from God. God is omnipresent. So every one of God's qualities are available to everyone all the time. We don't have to be concerned about growing and peaking out and then deteriorating, because since spirit is the only substance, that is our substance by reflection. There's no limit. All we have to do is play the part that we should be playing, which means focusing on the qualities of God in all thought, speech, and action. That's it. The formula is simple. We just have to do it individually, collectively, and universally. Are we limited by the belief of time? What does this say in Genesis 1? Verse 26, let us make man after God's image and likeness. And so God made man after the image and likeness of himself. If God cannot be experiencing a deficiency, nor can his reflection. All we have to do is claim our heritage of spirituality, because spirit is our substance. And everything we do, we can bless by following the universal laws of God in carrying out whatever the topic is, keeping always in mind the golden rule. For God is the one that does everything, because God is the only power, the only action. Anything we do that is successful is because we followed the laws of God. And it must be spiritual in nature, because nothing else matters. Frederick L. Rawson says, we should be able to demonstrate mentally anything we need to do without doing it physically, because we have dominion. It is obvious that spirit and matter are opposites. So if spirit is the only substance, which is the title of this plank number 18, where does that leave matter? Out in the cold. It has no foundation. It has no source. It has no spiritual substance, obviously, because it's the opposite of spirit. It has no structure, because principle is structure, and principle is the substance of spirit. Therefore, the next key point is very obvious. Key point number 2 says, spirit never created matter. There isn't anything that can create something that is the opposite of itself. Everything about God is mental and spiritual, just like mathematics. All of the digits of mathematics are mental. Nothing is physical about mathematics. The 10 digits are mental. The 4 operators, add, subtract, multiply, and divide, are mental. It can be calculated mentally. And if you want to write the symbols down on a piece of paper for some reason, you can do it just like you can write down the definition of God, utilizing the alphabet. But that doesn't mean God is the sentence. The sentence is only symbolizing what God is. We, as the image and likeness of God, are only symbolizing what God is if we are reflecting God. That means we cannot be reflecting matter. We cannot give substance to matter. We cannot give power to matter. Can we give power to a so-called material body? How is that possible? We've got to choose. Either fish or cut bait. We cannot have it both ways. We cannot eat the cake and still have it. We either have to decide if we're going to be reflecting our real self or not. Page 591 defines man in a few short words. Man is a compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full expression of mind. That is packed with everything we need to know about man. All we have to do is claim it, accept it, and refute anything that is unlike that definition because it is not us. It's not our brethren, our neighbor. It's not anyone. Because matter has no foundation. It has no source, and therefore no manifestation. And it cannot be the manifestation of anything else that is real. Because reality is of the substance of spirit. Matter is nothing. Point number three. There is nothing in spirit out of which matter could be made. For as the Bible declares, without the Logos, the Aeon, or Word of God, was not anything made that was made. And Genesis chapter 1 tells us the whole story. He goes through the 7 days. Each one is a revelation, not a creation. The first three words in the beginning, as has been interpreted by Mary Baker Eddy, that means in the only. Does truth have a beginning or an end? It couldn't be true if it does. It can't be true now, but it wasn't true a moment ago. Or it can't be true now and be false a moment after this. Truth does not change its character. It is always true. Truth is of the substance of spirit. So it can never end. It reflects life. Life is eternal. Therefore, life as truth is eternal. Truth is eternal. Because it has the qualities of life. Just like it has the qualities of mind, of being intelligent. The great redwood sequoia trees in Northwest California. They are known to be the largest and the oldest trees. They have shallow roots. You would think their roots would go to the center of the earth. A storm doesn't take them down. Why? Because below the surface of the dirt, whatever the landscape is, there are the roots, and they bond together with all the other roots of the redwood sequoia trees, all of them that are in a grove. They are all united as one. And that's the way we should be with our neighbor, with our brethren. We would never want to do anything harmful to anyone else if we realized we were all one grand family. When Jesus was asked, "What is the greatest commandment of all?" He said, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself." What does that mean? Love God with all your heart, with all your soul, and all your mind. Heart means you're really serious about it. If you love God with all your heart, you're not going to let anything interfere with your love for God. And if your love for God is genuine, you will want to reflect the qualities of God, because that's who we are. We do not own anything of ourselves. The only thing we have is what we can reflect. And if we reflect it, then we're reflecting the permanence of God, the power of God, the substance of spirit, the identity of soul, the structure of principle, the eternality of life. the fixedness, the constancy, the permanence of truth, and all of the qualities of love. Love is fulfillment. Love is completeness. Love is gentleness, kindness. Love is the lubricant that will smooth out from conflict to harmony any friction that exists, because oil is a primary quality of love. That means spiritual inspiration. And if we look at everything from a spiritual viewpoint, we will see the beauty in it. We will see the completeness. We could not be in conflict with a single quality of love if we're going to reflect the love of God. We can reflect the God love because God loved us. God loves His own manifestation, because that's what love is. God doesn't have to do anything. Everything is already done. We only have to open our eyes to our heritage. We have to deny that Adam and Eve is our heritage. We have to realize that the spiritual record of Revelation is in Genesis chapter 1 up through verse 3 of chapter 2. Elohim, that is the derivation of the word God in the spiritual record of our true revelation. It's not Jehovah or anything else which is used as the derivation of the word God used in Genesis chapter 2 and in many other parts of the Bible. Jesus asked Peter, "Do you love me?" And he said, "Yea, Lord, you know I do." And Jesus asked him again, "Do you love me?" The same answer. He asked him a third time, "Do you love me?" The third time, Jesus accepted what he said, because the word for God was different than the word used in the first two. Do you think it's important to know the original derivation of the words that are used in the Bible? There's proof right there. And the difference between Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2. Fortunately, we don't have to learn the original language of Hebrew and Greek and Aramaic, because that has already been done for us and made easy if we have English as our language. Because Strong's is a resource that has done it all for us. All we have to do is use the Strong's interlinear, and it will show us what is the original words that are used in the Bible. And we will be able to see that the word for God in the first chapter is Elohim, but that's not what it is in the second chapter. The translators were rather foolish because they used God as a generic word for many different words at different levels and different time periods, but they don't all mean God. If Plank 18 says the only substance is spirit and that it cannot create matter, and there is nothing in spirit out of which matter could be made, that is a spiritual answer to the question, are we material or spiritual? If we're made in the image and likeness of God, we cannot be material, because God is not made up of matter. Jesus could not possibly be God, because God is not a visible, physical body. Someone that is doing God's work and reflecting God is God-like in his activities. But he's not God. Jesus was God-like in his activities, but he himself said he wasn't God when the Pharisee asked him, "Good Master, how shall I attain eternal life?" Jesus told him, he's not God. He said, "Why call me good? There's only one good, and that's God." When Jesus said, "My Father and I are one," that doesn't mean the same entity. It means that he was reflecting the qualities of God. He was at one with God in the way he was conducting his life. We are at one with God if we reflect the qualities of God. But we're not God. Man is the reflection of God, not God itself. There's only one God, and that God is omnipresent. We can't be both God and God's reflection. We're not omnipresent. We are not omnipotent. We're not omniscient. We're not omnipower. We can reflect those qualities, but we cannot own them. God is the only owner of his qualities. We are merely reflecting them if we reflect them. If we're not reflecting them, we don't deserve to be called the image and likeness of God. So how much of our life are we going to devote to being the image and likeness of God? And how much are we going to devote being a poor reflection of what we really are supposed to be? The next key point, number 4. Spirit is the only substance, the invisible and indivisible, infinite God. God cannot be divided, and God is not visible. Spirit is the only substance. That is the only substance of God. God is spirit. That is our substance. The good we do and embody is the only power we have. Are we going to devote our life to doing the goodness of God? If so, then we have the power of God behind our actions. If we deviate from the truth about God, we cannot exercise any power, because if we deviate from God, then we are reflecting the fake substance of matter, or the fake mind called mortal mind, the fake soul called material senses. If we identify anything with material senses from a material standpoint, we're not reflecting God. We have to identify everything from a spiritual view. Mary Baker Eddy did a reality check, a self-examination, every hour to make sure that she was only looking upon everyone in her frame of thought as a spiritual existence, not matter, not mortal. She was attacked all the time by the people, even in her own church. But she responded with love. She responded by knowing that hate has no power. And it's not from God. It's not part of her nature, and it's not the part of anyone else's nature. Because everyone has the same spiritual source. And that is God. The perfect individual, incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite God. The God that is all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. The God that is principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love. The God that is all substance and eternal. The God that is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniaction. Not an accident, but omniaction. That means the only action that is real is a spiritual action. An action that is balanced and harmonious. An action that reflects good, which is defined as God's spirit. Omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Where is our thought? Are we keeping it on track, the track of truth, or are we deviating? Are we sticking to the truth that is stated in this plank number 18, where the topic is the only substance? Or are we deviating from it and giving substance to something that is physical? Are we giving it to a person? Are we giving it to anything we can touch? Currency? Gold, silver, a wife, husband, car, house, children, a movie that we're watching. When Kurt Russell was asked, how does his character in real life differ from the parts that he plays in the movie? He said, a movie is fantasy land. It has nothing to do with real life. Are we playing in fantasy land, thinking that it's real? Are we accepting an accident as being okay? Are we ignoring it when we see it? Are we accepting a stray dog that has no food or water, that is in desperate need, as being okay? Or do we do something about it? If we want to be able to heal ourselves, or be involved in assisting anyone else in healing, we better think about the very first step that is required. We say it very plainly on the website, mbeinstitute.org. What is it? It's very simple. How much time do we devote to caring for others that are in need? Doing something tangible that will help them. Whether it's thinking, or talking, or doing. Something constructive to help someone in need. Out of the 1,440 minutes a day, how much time do we devote to helping other people? Now, we don't want to be like the Boy Scouts. The Boy Scout Master said, now when you come back next week, they had a weekly meeting. He said, I want you to report to me something you did, a good deed you did every day. So I want 7 good deeds that you did between now and next week. So one guy said, I helped Mrs. It was a small village and everybody knew everyone else. He said, I helped Mrs. Smith across the street. Oh, that's good, Johnny. I know she's walking with a cane, and she probably really appreciated it. He asked the next boy, "What did you do?"
"I helped Mrs. Smith across the street."
Well, the other Boy Scout said that's what he did. "Did you do that also?"
He said, "Yes."
He said, "Why?"
"Well, it took two of us to do it because she didn't want to go."
So, helping someone to do something they don't want to do, that is not cultivating love. That's not cultivating giving. You're taking their independence away from them, their liberty, their desire to do what they want to do. She didn't want to go across the street. She was out shopping and she wanted to shop in the stores that was on her side of the street that she was on. Look for somebody that is in need. Put your thinking cap on, your creative ability, and see how you can help them. Help them do something that they would like to do, something that they need to do. Help them solve a problem. Money is not the answer to very many things, because what is really needed is what money will buy. Most of the nonprofit organizations that have children in the ad with just a pathetic situation that they're trying to portray are money laundering operations. The wealthiest man right now, far wealthier than anyone else, he started a government agency called DOGE, Department of Government Efficiency. And in their research, and he went in, you know, he started it the day that the president was inaugurated, January 20, 2025. And he found that all of these nonprofits that have these pathetic-looking images that they're trying to portray in order to pump money out of people are fraudulent. That between 95 and 100% of all the money they receive, they divide it up between themselves. They don't give it to the children that they portray in these videos that show how pathetic the children are. They're starving, they have no food, no shelter. It is one of the biggest frauds in history. Totally ridiculous. Between 95 and 100% of the money of donations they receive, they steal from the organization. Don't do it. Don't give them a penny. If you're going to give money as a donation, make sure it's going to be used for what it's advertised to be used for. Andrew Carnegie, very successful in business about 100 years ago or so, and he sold his biggest asset, which was a steel company, to a group of investors on Wall Street, and they named it U.S. Steel. He used the money, which was some $350 million, and in today's dollars, that would be a pile. I think it's something like $18 trillion. $18 trillion. Or no, that might be, it might have been $80 trillion. Well, you figure it out. There are websites that will calculate compound interest for you. So put in $350 million and 125 years of compounding. Put in 5%. Then put in 10%. You'll see the numbers are staggering. Yeah, I think it was $81 trillion. Because it would be enough to pay off the U.S. total debt.
which is supposed to be 35 trillion. So yeah, I think it was 81 trillion. That's if your investment earned 10% a year. And if it earned 5%, then it would be much less than that. So what he did is he took the money from selling his largest asset, and he didn't give the money to people that were supposed to build a university. He didn't give the money to a university that was supposed to build a building, a library or whatever. He was involved in it and made sure the money was paid to do what it was supposed to do. He didn't give them the money. He arranged and built the buildings. Or he constructed and had the whole university constructed. You can look around in the eastern part of the U.S. right now, and you'll find there's a university called the Andrew Carnegie University. I don't know, maybe the name has changed now, but it used to be. I'm aware of it. People love to have their name on things that they pay for to build their ego. He did a good thing, but it would have been better if he would have not been building up his ego by putting his name on it. He should have been creative and hidden where the money came from. But he did a lot of good. We have our choice. Do we want to give whatever we're giving away and get credit for it? Or do we want to give what we want to give away because there's a need and we don't want to receive the credit? If we're really humble, the idea didn't come from us. It came from God. So why do we want to take credit for something God did? God doesn't do anything. Read Genesis chapter 1. Everything was already done, and it was very good. If we're doing something good, and we give credit to God, that's correct. But it's because the laws of God are what govern the universe. There's no personal God that is doing anything. God is not a person. Everything has always been true about God. Goodness controls the universe. Whether we see it or whether we're living in a fantasy land of evil, that's up to us. But the goodness has already been established a long time ago. Forever. It's always been. As Frederick L. Rawson proved, there is no time. He was able to go back in time and heal, so that the healing took effect immediately after the individual recognized he had a problem. Frederick L. Rawson. Rawson. He's on our website. Everyone is by their last name. Alphabetical. One click and you can be on his index. Here are some thoughts from John L. Sinton. Oh, wait a minute. I don't think I finished everything. Let me read number 5 and 6. Right. Number 4 was the last one we did, which was spirit is the only substance, the invisible and indivisible infinite God. In other words, you cannot divide God into parts because God is infinite. Okay, number 5. Things spiritual and eternal are substantial. And number 6, things material and temporal are insubstantial. So there it is, summarized in 2 short sentences. A fellow said something that I read recently, and there was no name on it, but I just saw it for the first time. And it said that when you go around the corner, those are my words. He means when you pass on. What you can take with you is everything you've given away. And what you must leave behind is everything that you've taken. Did you insult somebody trying to lower their dignity of themselves or their image in other people's thoughts? That's taking. Did you go to a grocery store and they had something on sale that you particularly like, so you bought a ton of it, and then you have to throw half of it away because it spoiled before you could use it? Let's say it was a perishable produce item. That's taking. The Israelites, when they were out in the desert, they were told by God, that's the way the story goes, they were told that they should only take what they need and depend on God tomorrow to give them what they need tomorrow. They were given abundance as they were traveling, but they were only supposed to take what they needed. Do we only utilize what we need and trust God to take care of our need tomorrow? Are we using truth, which is trust? Trust is a word, one of the words to describe truth. Are we utilizing our understanding of truth to our highest degree? Or are we operating out of fear? When we take, we're operating out of fear. When we love, we're operating out of the opposite of fear, which is knowing there's abundance for exactly what we need. And there always will be abundance. But we have to act like it. We have to talk like it. We have to think like it. We have to trust. Alan Young was a very popular TV actor. He was a Christian Scientist. He wrote a book that was pointing out his disappointment about a particular institution, that they were not following the standards they should be following, and they hired him to do certain things and they wouldn't let him do what he was supposed to be doing because they wanted to control it and restrict his activities. He was very capable, probably the most capable person to do what he was supposed to be doing. So he wrote a book about it. I spoke with him before he went around the corner a few years ago. And he told me, I told him, you know, that was a really good book. It's important to expose evil. He said, I wish I would have never written it. He emphasized in that conversation the need to only love. Now, Mary Baker Eddy makes it clear that we need to expose evil. She has a whole chapter on it. Animal magnetism unmasked. Animal magnetism was the day that was used, in her day, that was used to describe all evil. In other words, it's the attraction to be like an animal, a cornered animal, one that acts out of fear, trying to survive, and therefore will fight, which of course is conflict and friction. Do we want to be like an animal? God gave us the ability to reflect intelligence from Him. And if we do that, and the other qualities, we will have dominion over everything in our life. Whether it's on the earth, below the earth, in the water, above, in the sky, everything. God gave man dominion over all the earth and everything in it. If we exercise that dominion in a spiritual way, We can never be afraid. We will never want to take. We will want to devote our life to giving. Giving, giving. Give to the stray dog. Give to the person in the wheelchair. Give to the one that just experienced an accident. Give to a homeless person. But if we don't follow mind, that is the term for God that includes intelligence, then we're being a fool. If we write a check out to one of these nonprofit organizations or transfer money, we don't even use checks anymore, and think we've done something good, we've been a fool. We've been a fool. If we see someone on the street that is in need, and we take the time to talk to them to see what is the situation, how did they get in this kind of trouble? There are some people that are homeless, living on the street, that are very well educated. They may have been involved in an accident. They might have had some kind of a major disability that came about as a result of it, to belief. Lost their job. Maybe they didn't have any relatives, or their relatives shunned them. And they got to the point that they didn't have any place else to live but on the street. Can you give them a hand up instead of a hand out? I know a fellow that was approached by someone when he came out of a department store, and he was asking for a donation, and the guy was dressed okay. Didn't look like he was somebody living on the street. And he said, well, why do you need money? He said, I lost my job, and I haven't eaten in the last 2 days, and I don't know what else to do. I don't even have money to put in my motorcycle to go and follow up on, have interviews. He ended up hiring the guy for 3 months because he was a handyman, and he fixed a list, everything on the list. Took him 3 months to do it. And by the time he got done with that, the guy had found another job, permanent full-time job. Because he took the time to ask him, why does he need the money? We have a responsibility to be intelligent. Don't just take the easy way out and flip somebody some coins or hand them some paper currency. I came out of a hotel one time, and I was taking a flight out early the next day, and so I went there the night before and stayed in a hotel. I don't know, I think I was leaving at like 4 o'clock in the morning or something. And that seemed to be the more intelligent thing to do, is to stay at the hotel next to the airport. And the evening before I left, I went out to get something to eat, and as I left the hotel, a fellow solicited me to buy a tire. He said, I have a flat tire up there at the top of the off-ramp, and I don't have the money to buy it. My car is sitting there. I don't know what to do. I said, how much does the tire cost? He said, $50. This was a long time ago. Now it'd probably be different. But anyway, he said, yeah, $50. He said, well, let's go up and take a look at the car. It was a fraud. It was a fraud. He was trying to scam me for $50. He didn't have a car. He didn't have a flat tire. He didn't have a need. So I went in and reported him to the hotel. I said, you know, this is giving your hotel a bad name. You got a guy outside that is scamming people to try to get $50 from them for a car that he doesn't have and a flat tire that he doesn't have. Thomas Burke wrote something, one sentence, I don't know, it was 200 years or more ago. It says, evil triumphs when good people do nothing. Think about that. Contemplate that.
Evil triumphs when good men do nothing. And that's just generic, man. It's generally a term used for all humanity. It could be a woman, a child, whatever. Are we going to do nothing when we know there's a need? That's what it refers to. You know there's a need, but you do nothing about it. You just hope that somebody else is going to do it. That's death. That is not doing something that is alive when you need to be doing it. You should be vivacious about solving the problem. Not be passive. Delaying or being passive is death. Being active and solving a problem is life. Do you want to live forever? Then act like it. Act alive. Do what needs to be done. Don't ignore what needs to be done. So if you want to learn how to heal yourself or be involved in helping other people be healed, the first thing you have to do is be a giver. And an intelligent giver. We have a link on our website, a button that says Heal Everything. There's 101 pages at the end of the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. And it is the testimonies of 85 different people that have testified to 486 different healings. That's combined. 486. So they average just under 7 healings apiece. They maybe thought they had one problem, and as they studied more and more deeply, they saw that other things that they weren't even thinking about were healed. And one of the beauties of Christian Science, which is also called the System of Divine Metaphysics, and you can see that on our home page in the left column, what that's all about. But basically, Mary Baker Eddy said that divine metaphysics has now been reduced to a system. Reduced by her in the textbook. And on page 330, she says there's 32 planks to the platform. That's what we're discussing right now, is plank number 18. She says, if you learn the letter and the spirit and understand them and live them, you will be able to demonstrate the system of divine metaphysics. And that's what we're teaching in this prayer treatment. We teach it. The website, the prayer treatments, they teach it. And we make it available so that you can, you know, it's on MP3, so you can play it and play it and play it. And we tell you the exact procedure that we know works, because it's modeled after chapter 18, the last chapter in the textbook. Imagine a 700-page book, and she devotes 1/7 of it, that's like 14%. She devotes 1/7 of it to gratitude, to healing, to a record of the healing. 15% of the book on being grateful because the textbook works. It heals. Well, it's really the truth that heals. But the textbook enlightens you to the facility of healing. Are you attending a church that focuses on healing? Einstein said, science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. Christian Science is exactly the answer to that, because it is science and the greatest religion of all, which is Christianity, because Christ Jesus was the example that we should be following. And Mary Baker Eddy is the one that figured out through her connection, listening to the spiritual guidance of God, on the science behind the healings of Jesus. And that's what Christian Science is. It's the science of the science behind the Christianity
healings that Jesus did. It's a science of Christianity, the science of healing, the science of how Jesus lived his life. But he didn't tell us how he did it. And that was a revelation that was for Mary Becchetti to do. She's prophesied in the Bible, in the Old Testament, just as Jesus was prophesied in the Old Testament. We should be very grateful. Let me share with you the thoughts that that John L. Sinton has on this 18th plank. They're in five key points. He repeats the first one, the only substance. Number two is, here is the eternal word or logos, proclaiming spirit, the only substance, invisible and indivisible. Number three, eon implies the creative word from all eternity. Creative word. We talked about the creative capability, the creative capacity that comes from mind. Number four, it is from this base that Mrs. Eddy could write the chapter in Unity of Good, There Is No Matter. Yeah, we have that article on the website. Excellent. Number five, the student is advised to study and ponder this profound statement. And he is quoting from Unity of Good, page 31 to 36, which is the article on There Is No Matter. If we get a clear understanding on There Is No Matter, then we know that the opposite is everything, the only substance. If there is no matter, then the opposite is what substance really is. John, the one out of 12 disciples that was loyal to Jesus, once he got over going to sleep when they went up the mountain, but after that, he started sharpening up and he ended up being by far the only loyal disciple. And as is explained by Robert C. Putnam, one of the greatest Bible scholars of all time next to Mary Becchetti, he wrote 10 Bible lessons. He was a student of Bliss Knapp. Bliss Knapp was tutored by Mary Becchetti since he was a young boy. In fact, he had the same amount of money when he passed on as did Andrew Carnegie, $350 million. That was around 1950. And he offered to give it all to the church if they'd do one thing. He didn't care about money when he was alive. He wasn't involved in investments. He made his investments when he was a young man, a very small amount, and he did nothing for his whole life. They just sat there, and they were worth that amount of money when he went around the corner. And the one thing that the Mother Church had to do in order to get the money was to publish his book called The Destiny of the Mother Church. Because he knew what Mary Becchetti had outlined in the manual that the Mother Church was supposed to do. And they did the opposite. The day she passed on, they took her picture out of the textbook. And then from there on out, they did everything they could to try to get people not to talk about her, not to mention her name at all, and not to give her credit for anything. Which, of course, is the opposite of what they should have been doing. She gave them her estate because they were supposed to promote not her, but Christian Science and the writings. Anyway, Robert C. Putnam was a student of Bliss Knapp, and Bliss Knapp, as mentioned, was under Mary Becchetti's tutelage since a young boy because his mother came to a tragic death. And his father was a lecturer for Mary Becchetti. This was back around 1880. So she had a choice. Either she loses him or she brings up the boy. And so she
raised the boy. So, John asked Jesus, is there a material body? The next question, is there a material universe? Physicists have studied their life to figure this out. If you know what quantum mechanics is all about, or quantum physics, they're two words for the same thing, because mechanics is one of the arms of physics, you will find that it's extremely important to understand what quantum physics and quantum mechanics is all about. We have it on our website. Instead of letting the cat out of the bag, go on the website and check it out. I think you'll be amazed. We have the record of Jesus' answer to those questions on the website with the proof of John asking the questions, and it's in a museum over in London. And we doubt if you will find it anywhere else in the world, but we have the record on our website. Frederick L. Rawson also said it's extremely important when you do a prayer treatment to cover the belief of matter, because he said that is the primary thing that everyone deals with when they have a problem. There were three Christian Science practitioners, in addition to Christ Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, that had constant, continuous, instantaneous healings with their patients. And they each had 15-minute appointments. By the end of 15 minutes, their patient was healed. Time and time and time again. Frederick L. Rawson is one of them, who also was able to go back in time and heal. And he tells you exactly how he did it. He did it over 500 times once he discovered how to do it. Wentworth Winslow raised a boy from the dead. And Joel Goldsmith went into a Christian Science nursing home and healed everybody in the nursing home of a contagious disease. They all had the same contagious disease at the same time. He went over there to see one of his patients who called him to help. And they didn't want him to go into where the patient was. And when he asked, they said, everyone here is under contagious disease. You go in there, you're going to come back with the disease. So he went over and sat down in the reception area, had some quiet time thinking about the truth about everyone. And in a few minutes, the nurses started coming out and they said, what happened? Everyone's healed, all at the same time. That's Joel Goldsmith. The primary focus of this 18 is about real substance. Therefore, this prayer treatment will close with the scientific statement of being, which lays it right on the line about matter versus spirit. And then there'll be just a few words after that to close out the recording. Here is the scientific statement of being by Mary Baker Eddy from page 468 in the textbook, which is chapter 14, recapitulation. There is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is the unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is his image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material. He is spiritual. Amen. It is January 5, 2026, Monday. at 12:42, just after noon. The title of this prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, the website mbeinstitute.org, which is a focus on plank number 18 of 32 planks that are detailed in the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, between the pages 330 and 340. And this is just almost exactly in the middle of those pages. And the title to this plank 18 is The Only Substance. Thank you for listening. The end.